Former Ukraine Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch gives personal testimony in the impeachment probe.
I was shocked and devastated that I would feature in a phone call between two heads of state in such a manner where President Trump said that I was bad news to another world leader.
Federal prosecutors investigate how Rudy Giuliani stood to profit from Ukrainian energy projects.
It fits into this broader piece of sort of influence peddling, which is at the sort of heart, along with Rudy Giuliani's work, of what was going on in the Ukraine.
And a funny thing happened with the Dow this week. Not much. It's Friday, November 15th. This is the PM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Longtime Republican operative Roger Stone was convicted today on federal charges of lying to Congress and witness tampering. Prosecutors made the case that Stone misled Congress about his efforts to contact WikiLeaks during the 2016 presidential campaign. Our Shelby Holliday says Stone's the sixth Trump associate to be convicted on charges stemming from former special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election interference.
It's significant, especially against the backdrop of impeachment, because the committee that Roger Stone was convicted of lying to is Adam Schiff's committee, the Democratic congressman from California. Well, Congressman Schiff is running impeachment hearings right now, and he's become sort of a punching bag for Republicans and defenders of the president. And so this sends a clear signal to anyone who may be testifying in the impeachment probe that you better be honest, you better tell the truth, you better not withhold documents and names and just be forthright.
Stone will be sentenced in February. The witness tampering charge could get him up to 20 years in prison. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear an appeal by Google's parent company Alphabet challenging its copyright case loss to software company Oracle. In 2010, Oracle alleged that Google's Android smartphone operating system infringed on copyrights related to Oracle's newly acquired Java platform. Google said copying Java code for its operating system was fair use, but an appeals court rejected that defense last year. Oracle has sought as much as $9 billion. The Supreme Court is expected to hear the case early next year, with a decision expected before the end of the court's term in June. Twitter says it will restrict issue-based advertisers from targeting users by zip code or possible political affiliation. Today's announcement is part of the social media company's efforts to block most political and cause-based ads on its platform. Last month, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey said the company would stop accepting political and issue ads with some exceptions, like those encouraging voter registration. The Trump administration has released a plan that would force hospitals and insurance companies to be more transparent and disclose the prices they negotiate for drugs, facility fees, and care by doctors. The plan could upend commercial healthcare markets, which have a complex system of hidden charges, varying prices, and secret discounts. The new rule could face legal challenges from the healthcare industry. And Cleveland Browns defensive lineman Myles Garrett has been suspended indefinitely by the NFL for a violent attack near the end of Thursday's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Garrett took Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph's helmet off his head and used it to bludgeon him. The league said Garrett will be suspended without pay for at least the rest of this regular season and postseason and must meet with the NFL commissioner before a decision will be made on his potential reinstatement. After the game, Garrett said, quote, "I made a mistake. I lost my cool. I regret it." In testimony that went on for hours, Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, told lawmakers in the impeachment inquiry how she was unfairly targeted by allies of President Trump and how that eventually led to her firing. President Trump took aim at Yovanovitch even as the public hearing was underway. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff asked her about a tweet by the president during the hearing.
But would you like to respond to the president's attack that everywhere you went turned bad?
Well, I don't think I have such powers, not in Mogadishu, Somalia, not in other places. I actually think that where I've served over the years, I and others have demonstrably made things better, you know, for the U.S. as well as for the countries that I've served in.
Joining me now from Washington with more details is Wall Street Journal reporter Byron Tao. Byron, tell us about that moment we just heard where Yovanovitch responded more or less in real time to the president's criticism of her.
Yeah, it was certainly very interesting. It was essentially, you know, the president and a witness in his impeachment inquiry having a dialogue, even though they essentially weren't in the same room. And I think a lot of Democrats found her answer very compelling, you know, especially the part where she said that it's quite intimidating that the president tweets like that at his critics. And you even saw the chairman, Adam Schiff, suggest that the president's tweet could be seen as witness tampering or witness intimidation and an attempt to derail the congressional probe.
Before going public today, Yovanovitch had also testified behind closed doors. Byron, what else struck you about her appearance before Congress today?
Well, you know, I think she came across as a career public servant. She went out of her way to emphasize that she served presidents of both parties. She joined the Foreign Service during the Reagan administration. She's been appointed ambassador by both George W. Bush and Barack Obama. She came across as sober. She generally avoided wading into the partisan controversy and tried to stick to the facts. But she also spoke, you know, from the heart quite often, talking about her family escaping persecution in the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany and what serving America means to her, and talking about what the personal impact of basically her removal as ambassador had on her and her life.
We've now heard from three witnesses who testified publicly this week. Taken together, what kind of picture are we starting to see, or what kind of picture are they painting of what went on here between the U.S. and Ukraine?
Well, they certainly raise a lot of questions about the direction of U.S.-Ukraine relations, specifically who was managing it. We've now heard from three State Department officials who say essentially that there was this sort of outside channel, outside influence on U.S. foreign policy that had a direct line to President Trump and bypassed the normal channels in the State Department. Democrats are pushing the notion that the president's actions around Ukraine warrant his removal from office, and Republicans essentially are saying nothing to see here. But in general, we're seeing this portrait of career State Department officials being very befuddled by the direction that President Trump decided to take U.S. foreign policy.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Byron Tao joining us from Washington. Byron, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And now, a Wall Street Journal exclusive. We report that federal investigators in New York are looking into whether Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's personal lawyer, stood to profit from a Ukrainian natural gas deal. Our Rebecca Davis O'Brien says it could give us another piece of the puzzle into the U.S. pressure campaign in Ukraine. And she joins me now in our studio in New York. So, Rebecca, what can you tell us about what exactly federal prosecutors are looking into regarding Rudy Giuliani and links to Ukrainian energy projects?
Sure. Federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York are looking into whether Rudy Giuliani was in a position to profit personally from Ukrainian natural gas business that was being pushed, promoted by two of his associates, Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas.
Remind us again about these associates. Are they revealing more details about their work with Giuliani?
I don't know if it's them. I think reporting has been, you know, across a lot of different media outlets has been talking about what they were up to. They seem to have been kind of crisscrossing Ukraine and in the United States as part of sort of an arm of Mr. Giuliani. They were helping him sort of circle the wagons on some investigations Mr. Giuliani was pushing for on behalf of President Trump. They were sort of working with him there. And they were charged last month in the Southern District of New York with campaign finance-related violations.
So have you heard from Rudy Giuliani in regards to your reporting on this story?
I did speak with him and his lawyer this morning. As the story shows, he vigorously denies being in a position to profit from this or having any business interests in Ukraine. And, of course, our story is merely saying that Southern District prosecutors are looking at that and that and more broadly that Mr. Fruman and Mr. Parnas were in the Ukraine representing that they were working with Rudy Giuliani in this project and that he would have a piece of it. So it's a little bit complicated, but I'm sure that reporters and prosecutors will get to the bottom of it.
So all eyes are on the impeachment hearings today. So what are the potential implications here for the impeachment inquiry?
Well, I think one thing that's interesting, and this is not – I don't have any indication this is part of the Southern District inquiry, but it does fill in another piece of this puzzle about the broader pressure campaign that Rudy Giuliani was apparently part of. What we learned in my reporting is that in these meetings in Ukraine, which Mr. Parnas and Mr. Fruman were seeking assistance with investigations into – Joe Biden and the 2016 election and gathering support for the ouster of the ambassador who was testifying today, that they were also talking about these energy projects and Naftogaz, which is the Ukraine's state-owned energy company. So it fits into this broader piece of sort of influence peddling, which is at the sort of heart, along with Rudy Giuliani's work, of what was going on in the Ukraine.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Davis O'Brien joining me here in our studio in New York. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Finally, it's been a bit of a strange week on Wall Street. On Friday, the Dow closed above 28,000 for the first time on optimism over trade and the economy. And on Tuesday, the Dow also did something it almost never does. It ended the session exactly where it closed on Monday. Exactly. And that got some market watchers in a tizzy. Our Karen Langley explains.
When you think of the thousands of trades that are going on all around the world throughout the trading day in the stocks that make up the Dow, it's just remarkable that all of those numbers would balance out at the end of the day to the precise, to the decimal point number as the Dow closed out the day before. It's just really weird that that would happen.
Our team investigated and found that in the past 123 years, that's more than 33,000 trading days, the Dow has ended the session unchanged just 167 times. And it's been a while since that's happened.
An unchanged Dow, or an UNCH in Wall Street parlance, hadn't happened for more than 5 years. It had last happened in April of 2014. And when we looked back, we saw that this has happened three times since 2000. And it had happened more frequently in the earlier years of the Dow when the index was a little bit smaller, but seems to have been getting more and more rare.
Finance geeks are still unraveling the mystery of the UNCH. What do you think? Let us know by tweeting us at WSJ Podcasts. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.